Here we go.
Holy shit. Shit.
Thursday, February the 26th, 2016. I am Morps. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I actually don't know what show number this is.
4,821.
It could be. It could very well be. It could also be... scroll down to the bottom of the list here. Could actually be 207.
In my show, we're experiencing many consecutive moments of now, and it's like 4,000 something now.
Okay, there should only ever be one dot on that screen, Madman. You're breaking your time. So, that point aside, obviously we have Madman tonight, who is breaking time. We're not even going to talk about what happens when you break time.
L. Ron Hubbard knows, and only L. Ron Hubbard.
Nah, you just need a lot of super glue.
And no, duct tape.
Fine tweezers.
Duct tape. Light side, dark side holds the universe together.
And you're thinking of the Force. BSV, what are you drinking?
Same old Angry Orchard.
Static.
I'm a creature of habit.
Static, what are you drinking?
Kraken Black Spiced Rum.
Nice. I'm actually kind of slumming it this week. I'm just drinking Amberbach. So, you know, Amberbach, Scared Water, it's about the same thing. Madman, what are you drinking?
Sam Adams Cold Snap.
Oh, is that any good? I saw that.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Might have to try that. Are you? What do you got?
A large glass of water. Nothing inventive this week.
Oh, well, at least you're getting your daily dose of lead.
Only if he's drinking water from Michigan.
You haven't taken a TDS meter to your water, have you? So.
I drink water from a filter.
Oh, yeah, that helps. Well,
hopefully.
Some of them it does. Some of them it does. So, for anybody who has not been keeping up with the Apple versus the FBI. Congratulations, you're ignoring the distraction story. But for everybody who's been losing their mind over it, I guess we should talk about it just to kind of clarify. I get if you really don't know what I'm on about, the FBI is demanding that Apple help them to break into iPhone 5C that was owned by one of the people involved in the San Bernardino shooting. So, it's a terrorist phone. But Apple is refusing to do it, primarily claiming they can't. But,
isn't it true it was unlocked when they found it? They accidentally locked it?
Oh, that's the funny part. It's a government-owned phone, because the San Bernardino shooters worked for Department of Health or something like that?
Nice.
And, so it's already their phone, right? Like, so that's where some of this gets really interesting. Is you know, the government already owned this phone, and they reset the password on it so that you couldn't get back into it, because Apple could have actually given them the iCloud backup because they were the legal owners of the phone, or at least the government agency that was the legal owners of the phone didn't object, and they very much could have gotten the iCloud backup because it had, I don't think they named which one it was, but it had an MDM on it, like a Good or a Good's the one that comes to mind. Well, there's a few others out there, but it was one of those company manages your cell phone for you, which is normal for any enterprise-issued phone. And they reset the passcode. And, you know, they've had this phone for months, so I assume any terrorists that know that their contact information is on that thing have probably already gone to ground. I don't know what they actually expect to get off of it at this point, but they had. Well, it could be.
They did this on purpose.
Oh, I know they did this.
They locked it on purpose. Okay. Yeah. Good.
I'm kind of explaining the full story so we know what this really is. Now, up until iOS 8, Apple had helped the FBI get into confiscated phones. iOS 8, they changed the encryption, claim they can't. And let's be really real, Apple is doing this for marketing reasons. They don't care about your privacy. They don't give a shit. They have two goals in mind. One, they don't want to have to operate the phone decryption department of the FBI, because that's exactly what it would be. And two, it's marketing. It lets them say, look, see, our phones are so secure, not even the government can get into it. So, they don't care. They do not care about your privacy, insofar as anything beyond a marketing strategy. But just to kind of make the point, the article here from the New York Times is that Apple has more demands to unlock 9 more iPhones. So pretty much what would happen is if Apple complied with the court order, and I'll explain the court order here in a minute, they might as well set up, have the FBI set up an office in Cupertino, because they're just going to have a conveyor belt of confiscated phones that they want decrypted being shipped to Apple for decryption. But if you go and actually look at what the court has asked, they're not demanding that Apple build a backdoor. They're not demanding that Apple unlock all phones on demand. What they are asking Apple to do is to provide tools to allow the FBI to brute force the PIN code on the phone, without it being reset and without the arbitrary delays that it starts putting in when you're guessing PIN codes. Like when it starts waiting for like an hour when you get up to like 8 or 9 PIN code guesses trying to get into your phone. So the idea is to intentionally slow it down to make brute forcing it functionally impossible. At least practically impossible might be a better way to put it. Functionally, it's possible. It's just difficult. But
it would just take thousands of years at one point.
Well, unless you turn on the option that after 10 tries, erase the phone. In that case, you could eventually get in, but you'd lose all the data, which is kind of defeating the point. When this first came out, I was saying, well, why don't they just go for the iCloud backup? All these phones are backing up to the cloud automatically by default. And apparently they did and couldn't get into it because they changed the flip and pin after they had confiscated it, which makes me think they're intentionally going for precedent here. They want to be able to force companies to decrypt products. So they're kind of forcing the issue by saying, oh, look, it's a terrorist phone. Apple has to help us do this. So, yeah, they're going for legal precedent. And if Apple provides them the tool to do the brute force, they're not going to use it for more than they're going to use it for more than this phone. They're going to use it for every phone they confiscate from now on, because they will have the tool to break into the phone. Now, here's what's really interesting.
Then it will get leaked, and everyone will be able to use it for
eventually,
whatever
yes.
phone they get.
But here's the really interesting thing. Apple claims they don't have the tools that the FBI is requesting, which means to comply with the court order, Apple would have to create them. And I understand it's the All Writs Act. I'm not so sure that the government can compel you to create software.
The way the All Writs Act was originally intended, it was to produce something that you had, not to create something new.
Correct.
So a writ of habeas corpus falls under the All Writs Act. So if someone produced a writ of habeas corpus to Morp saying, produce the body of Madman, and I'm not currently locked in one of his closets, then all he has to say is, well, I don't have that body, and he has complied with the writ.
So,
the Apple doesn't already have the tools, if they're going with just the All Writs Act, they say, we don't have the tools.
Well,
we've now complied with the writ.
Yeah. And that's the other part. Again, it's a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
Apple's making a really big deal out of this because they want to say, see, look, we're even fighting the government on your behalf to keep your phone safe. But the question is, though, I mean, I don't like the concept, but can the government actually compel Apple to write software to get into these phones? That's effectively what they're asking for.
That would be legalizing slavery. You're forcing someone to do work for you.
Well, I mean, they said they'd pay them. It's in the subpoena that they can, they will report compensation or reasonable compensation to the court.
But they get to choose what's reasonable. It's not, we're doing a contract now, I'll write you this code, but it's going to cost you $100 billion. The price should be negotiated up front, and then it goes from being a writ to a contract to develop software.
So, for anybody not paying attention, though, that's what this is. It's a marketing campaign. Does this cover what you wanted to hit, Static?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I find it very interesting that none of this was brought to light until just recently. You know, I mean, how long has this been going on now? Month?
I always say it's been out for a couple of years, but I mean, the San Bernardino shooting was 2-3 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And this is the second case involving the same thing. They're actually being sued with two different writs in two different jurisdictions, one in California and one in New York. Two different cases.
It's another example of the media and how they skew and slant everything as ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it. Anytime you see an article in the newspaper that you know something about, and you see just how horribly wrong the reporter gets it, and then you look at something you don't know about, why would you trust them about the subject you don't know it about when you know they're obviously wrong about the subjects you do know about? The hacker 4chan as a fun example.
Nice.
I know that man. He shoves Jell-O down today. His pants and is very strange. Avoid him.
Avoid him. So, I don't know. I mean, does anybody have a different take on what this is?
Do you think they don't actually have the tools to do what they're saying?
I think they probably have some debug tools that would facilitate some of the functionality. Like, I wouldn't be pleased about it, but if they had issued a subpoena for give us all of your development tool chain so that we can find a way to get into this phone, wouldn't have been happy about it, but that's legal because it's something they already have. But the thing is, I guess it's a writ, but that request from the court was very specific about software packages and bundles and images. I mean, they talked to somebody who knew what Apple's chain looked like before they wrote that thing, because it was got into very specific details. And they were describing what sounded like some of Apple's internal debug tools, where they would have development images they could load on phones to, maybe have settings turned off or not wipe the phone so they could test pin codes or maybe not have the pin code delay enabled. Because that's what they want, is they want the pin code wipe to be turned off whether or not it's on. They want to be able to test as many pins as they want without the arbitrary delays getting kicked on. And they want to be able to test them digitally. They want to do it over the connector port as opposed to having to actually have somebody type on the phone. That's obviously so they can script it and just have a computer brute force its way in a couple of hours as opposed to because
somebody messing up keying it in with their thumbs.
Yeah, because a 6-digit pin for a computer to bust through, even if it has to try them all, I think it's like at most a couple of days. Because there's a couple of milliseconds of delay the system introduced while it checks the pin, and if you're doing it digitally, it has to go across the cord. So I thought I remembered somebody saying somewhere it would take like 45 minutes to try them all, but I doubt it'll actually go that fast. It'd probably end up taking a day or two.
And if they can push that out in a firmware update to a terrorist's phone, they can push that out in an update to everyone's phone.
Yeah, then they have to admit that they have backdoor access to everybody's phone to push updates even with the pin lock on. So, it's like, yeah, we can actually push software even if the phone's locked. because they make a big deal about making you punch in your password and your PIN every time you do updates, and how it can't do anything without that password, or at least your fingerprint. But that's a 5C, so you know a fingerprint won't get you in. So I guess that's kind of the upswing of the new phones, is if the government confiscates it, all they have to do is confiscate one of your fingers to unlock the phone, so they don't have to...
Yeah, they'll always give you a finger back when they give the phone back. Nothing
in this case. Well, in this case, I assume it's going to happen when, you know, you're arrested. The cop will just grab your hand and press it to the phone to unlock the phone. So if you're doing something you're concerned about, one, you probably shouldn't take your phone with you. But two, maybe don't use your fingerprint in the phone. Turn that part off, or you know, use a weird finger. So when they're trying to force your hand on it,
pick another part of your body. They all have swirls.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure if you're on the subway and decide you want to play Angry Bird, somebody's going to get pretty upset if you wipe your, you know, whip your dick out to unlock your phone.
I wasn't sexually harassing her. I was advertising.
There's an app for this, and an accessory.
The fingerprint scanner extender.
No, it's already made. It's the Fleshlight mount.
Wow. If you get the gyrations just right to win that game.
Aren't they increasing the... aren't they increasing the vibration now?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Just like the selfie stick, they can make an adapter piece for it, so that way when it vibrates, it has an internal motor or something that it amplifies.
I don't know. Madman, I think you had an inside line to the Disney Imagineers. Do you know of any projects going on?
I don't want to talk to those guys. They're weird. And now they have Indian accents. At least before they were weird and I can understand them.
Those guys, super weird.
Super weird. So. But I could also see this as an issue on just selling phones in the future. Think of how big a deal the government makes over smartphones being secure. Now, if you have a phone that you know is not secure, are you going to allow your agents to be using it?
Well, I mean, I had that article earlier about the lawyer in Arizona was saying their agency is no longer going to buy iPhones because they support the terrorists. But how many people won't buy iPhones if you know the government has backdoors to them?
Well, it's not just how many people, how many agencies. Because if there's a backdoor that the government has, that's a backdoor that exists. Someone else can find it. And sure, then it's not just this government. Apple does a lot of business overseas.
Using they let that China logic, do a security audit, didn't they?
Yes.
Using that logic, more so like Lenovo should have been a fucking out of business years ago.
Well, that's true.
Of course, people are always going to buy it. They don't give a fuck.
Well, they just don't know. But you're right. All right. I'm covered on that, and I really have no intention of talking about it any further, except that's about the only articles there are, is Apple and the FBI this, Apple and the FBI that, Google and Microsoft are supporting Apple. All right, that's enough.
And what's sad is, I don't even know if it's sad. I'm hoping this was an intentional and it's a freedom-loving person within our government. Had that request not been public, I don't think Apple would be fighting it. If it was just quietly done behind the scenes, I think they would have every tool Apple has to pop up in a phone.
Didn't they make a request that it be sealed? And the government
yes,
denied
Apple
it?
Apple wanted it to be sealed. The government denied it.
Yeah, the only reason they're fighting it is because of the, you know, the reputation damage.
So, if whoever in the government actually put out that writ was half intelligent and wanted it to succeed, they would have sealed it. That's why I'm hoping that it was intentionally left unsealed, because there's someone that's actually wanting
security and freedom in our country. Yeah. If it's sealed, though, you can't reference it later for precedent, can you? Because, I mean, if it's sealed, you don't know what they did, so how could it create precedent? I think this is somebody in the government wanted to make precedent that they can force tech companies to unlock their products.
I think generally sealed, that just means the public doesn't see it.
Well, most lawyers are not, you know, privy to. No, not without agreements. Am I wrong? I figured if most lawyers don't know about it, it's not going to be in the legal libraries until it's unsealed at a certain date. Am I wrong?
I'd say so.
I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I honestly could be wrong on this one. So,
I have no idea.
About government lawyers. Government doesn't steal things from itself.
Yeah. So we've got all these laws that you don't know about, and that's fair. That seems like a fair playing ground right there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, anyways, all right, let's move on to the next one here. This is from the Linux Mint blog. Beware of hacked ISOs if you downloaded Linux Mint on February the 20th. So not the torrents, but the actual mirrored ISOs on Linux Mint. The Linux Mint website and forum apparently has been compromised for months. And then last week somebody sold access to it, and they went in and backdoored the actual ISOs for Linux Mint. And somebody even claiming to be the hacker put out a statement saying, MD, you know, hashes? Who the hell checks those? And if you think about it, it makes sense, because if you pwned the website enough to be able to switch the image, you could change the hash on the web page. Apparently the hacker didn't, or the guy who got into their page didn't. He didn't even bother. He just said nobody's going to look at it. So, yeah. If you downloaded Linux Mint recently, you might want to reinstall your system, because that ISO has apparently been pwned.
Nice.
Pre-owned. And they also put out a statement saying that if you have a Linux Mint forum account, you need to change your password, because apparently the database has been dumped. So
hopefully password didn't correspond to your checking account.
Well, not only that, yeah, if you didn't use that password in other places. So, but the thing about this one is Mint is a fairly well-known. Mint is a fairly well-known Linux distro. It's one of the most popular ones out there. I don't remember exactly, but I think it topped Distro Watch for a while. I mean, that's amazing that somebody got into that. Yeah, Mint is still number one on DistroWatch for the 6-month distribution. It's rapidly going down, I'm sure, but
it'll be number 10 with a bullet any moment now.
But actually, it's still first in the DistroWatch rankings. Let's see, data span for the past 7 days. What does the past 7 days look like? It's still number one. Got the little red arrow next to it, but it's still number one by like a lot. So, I mean, it's amazing to me that a distro with that much push isn't and doing better on their website security.
How long it was popped?
Months. Now, admittedly, if somebody's just got the access and they're not doing anything with it other than maybe poking around, you may not see it. You may not notice it. That's okay. But it's not okay. It's understandable, because they're not doing anything to get the attention, right? If they're not changing anything, if all they're doing is logging in and looking, yeah, they're pulling your data down, they're getting your passwords, but they're not giving you much other than the connection and possibly some data pull to go off of. So I can see that not getting caught. But when they're changing the ISOs out, that's that might be kind of a big deal. So, you know, I mean, they always talk about checking those hashes when you download a Linux ISO. Every tutorial you ever see always says check your hashes. But I don't think that does much good, because if I hacked your website, I'd change the hash on the site. I think your better bet is I don't know if any distros are actually doing it, but cryptographically signing it with like a PGP. That way you could actually check the signature and make sure that it came from your trusted source. But hell, most of your repositories don't even go over HTTPS, so I guess you could man in the middle of somebody's app GET if you really wanted to. But I don't know. Nobody else really
care
about that?
They ever figure out how they did it?
They got in through the forums.
Okay.
They were able to escalate from forums to the rest of the website.
I guess that's a good argument on keeping your forums completely separate from everything else important.
Yeah. Or in our case, we just tell people go use the subreddit.
Use the subreddit.
Let Reddit handle the security. I just don't want to deal with it. So, all right, this next article is awesome. From hyperallergenic.com. Last October, two artists entered the Neues Museum in Berlin, where they clandestinely scanned the bust of Queen Nefertiti, the State Museum's prize gem. 3 months later, they collected the released 3D dataset online as a torrent and providing completely free access under public domain to the one object in the museum's collection off-limits to photographers. Anyone can download and remix the information now that the artists themselves have used to create a 3D printed 1-to-1 polymer resin model they claim is the most precise replica of the bust ever made, with just micrometer variations. The bust now resides permanently in the American University of Cairo as a stand-in for the original. 3,300-year-old work that was removed from its country of origin shortly after its discovery in 1912 by German archaeologists in Armna. So, what happened here is, so this museum in Berlin doesn't even let you photograph this bust. You know, it's like almost a state secret. Look at the thing. And so somebody snuck a couple of Kinect scanners in there. Like Microsoft Kinects. Like, so like what? Did they have the thing in their hand and the cord up the jacket or something? They don't really explain it.
Well, the video actually shows pretty much they have it strapped to their chest with the jacket over them and a scarf hiding the
device. So it's under their neck. Okay.
Well, yeah.
And then
they just move the scarf. To scan, and
that is hilarious. I love it.
Nice. We won't let you have your national treasure back, but you can have a 3D model of it.
Well, you know, if you think about it, a lot of these ancient stone carvings are just a specifically shaped piece of rock. So if you take a perfect digital, photogrammetry is not necessarily perfect, but if you take a reasonably accurate 3D model of the device by scanning it, and you now have that shape preserved digitally, put it out there on the internet, people could 3D print it, maybe, you know, find something in exploring the model. You know, if you really wanted to crowdsource archaeology, that'd be a way to do it. But yeah, what you're going to see is a lot of people putting Nefertiti's head on the Buddha body on Thingiverse, I'm sure. But or grabbing, you know, one of the other models on there and sticking her head on things. That's usually what happens on Thingiverse for remixes, is they you know, stick sunglasses on them or put them on the Buddha body or, you know, whatever. So we're going to see some really goofy crap with the Nefertiti head, but I may have to get this model and print it just for fun. I'm not going to print one for one. I'll scale it down a bit, but it'd be kind of fun to have. And the actual website is nefertitihack.alloversky.com. And they've got an OBJ file, so all you got to do is just pull it down and do whatever
and
with it.
Who doesn't want their own little piece of history?
And I think technically they were still going by the guidelines of the museum. They didn't take a picture.
No, they took a 3D scan, which is a series of pictures, but hey. So, yeah, I have to I have to pull this in. So I'm going to go ahead and download that OBJ file right now, just so I don't forget about it. And they're saying in the chat room, it's a quick download, just go ahead and pull it down. So, yep, it's done. So, joys of having a decent internet connection. Next story up is from Torrent Freak and is hilarious. Link's posted here. RU had to run, that's okay. Hopefully he'll be back in. According to Torrent Freak, software piracy hurts Linux adoption, researchers find.
What?
I'm going to go ahead and say it now. You should not pirate software. Not for reasons of intellectual property. Of course, we do everything Creative Commons, and we want that respected as well, so I guess we should respect their license. But the main reason not to pirate software is most of it is full of viruses. Yeah, I mean, most, you know, you go on a website and download a Windows torrent that's not from Microsoft, you know, these pre-built Windows ISOs that have all kinds of software and shit in them, I can guarantee you there's four Windows or five Nemesis. Botnets in those.
Everyone loves Windows Nemesis and its botnet.
You know, the original version of that thing was cool. But yeah, somebody else made a version of the same thing. And that's the other thing, too, is these release groups, yeah, you don't know that it's the same group using the name, right? So, you know, somebody else sees a popular project, they may take the name, make a little tweak to make it even better, and then, oh yeah, and a botnet.
makes it better.
Linux is already free. How can you pirate something that's free?
No, they're saying piracy of Windows is hurting Linux adoption.
Oh, okay.
So it's no secret that it's no secret that Windows operating system is one of the most widely pirated pieces of software in the world. Microsoft is not happy with this fact, as it costs the company millions in lost revenue. Not sure
okay,
how,
that's
since
crap.
they're giving Windows away for free now, but, well, they're giving the upgrade away. You have to still have a key. But new research suggests that Linux adoption is being hurt as well. The findings published by Norwegian economist researcher Arne Raj Gramstad shows that software piracy significantly decreases the adoption of desktop Linux distributions. Excuse me. In a paper titled Software Piracy and Linux Adoption, Gramstad examines the relationship between local software piracy rates based on the BSA's data and the use of Linux as a desktop operating system, while controlling for potentially interfering factors such as gross domestic product per capita and local anti-piracy efforts. The result is a model which predicts that more people would use Linux as software piracy in general was less prevalent in the country. So it makes sense because Linux is free. So if you can't afford Windows, you would use Linux. Well, if you steal Windows, that makes Windows free, and all the games are on Windows. So I understand where he's coming from here. It's an interesting... It makes sense on a conceptual level, and the fact that he's got the data to back it up. So this means that if all piracy was to disappear, the number of Linux users would increase by 50%. So
that's a good jump.
Well, considering Linux is roughly 1% of the total desktop use, you're talking about a jump from 1% of the market to 1.5. But still, I mean,
I think what would help Linux more is if games were games were written on it.
Yes.
Well, games and other software, like some of the 3D modeling software I use for my printer is Windows only, which is really frustrating. And yeah, games, of course. And I've got
that's kind of weird to me, because for some reason I've always thought the 3D printing community and the Linux community would be joined at the hip.
Oh, they are. Simplify 3D, Slicer, Cura, all those have Linux versions. The problem is the modeling software. There's Blender and FreeCAD, but you know, if you want to do CAD modeling, all the Autodesk stuff is Windows only. The one I use, Cubify, is Windows only. I don't think Rhino has a Linux version. I think several of them have Mac versions, but I'm fairly certain they don't have Linux versions. So, but yeah, the one I use definitely doesn't, because I've looked and tried to get it to run under Wine and tried to see how well it would run in a virtual machine. Because at one point I really wanted to make the effort to get away from Windows, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But next story up is from the International Business Times. Brazil is constructing a dedicated underwater cable link to the Southern American, or a, let me try that again. Brazil is constructing a dedicated underwater cable to link the Southern American country's internet directly with Europe to avoid any espionage attempts by the United States. The structure, which is estimated to cost up to $250 million, will come into operation in late 2017 and is likely to be supported by tech giants Google and Facebook. Brazil's communications minister, André Figueiredo, if I said that right, probably not, Figueiredo? Said that nearly a dozen multinational tech giants have shown interest in becoming part of the venture. If the newly erected submarine cable comes into place, Brazil will be able to entirely avoid the United States, which is primarily its primary transfer node for Brazil's internet traffic. The 5,900 kilometer long cable will link Brazil and Portugal directly. So, yeah, to avoid piping through the United States internet, they're spending a lot of money on an undersea cable.
Hold up. So, if this drops users, does that mean my bandwidth will get larger?
Yeah, it would be an increase in bandwidth. It's more copper.
So we need to rent a submarine with a cutting blade on the end of it?
Oh, if the United States really wants to spy on it, we already have those. Yeah, they'll just tap the cable, guys. Sorry.
Ooh. We used to do that in Russia, and they made it so easy. They put signs on the beach where their underwater cables were, advising that you couldn't fish there. So we had subs look for signs, and then just search for the cables near the don't fish signs.
Well, truth be told, though, it's probably as much to improve their bandwidth, like you were saying, as it is for, you know, avoiding espionage.
Yeah, because to avoid espionage now, how hard is it actually to decrypt things?
If you're using proper encryption, it's a pain in the ass to get into it.
That's how usually you avoid espionage.
Yeah, if you have to maintain good key discipline, but yeah, that's how you do it.
But and also when there's only one connection point really to you and the rest of the world internet wise, if something goes wrong with that one,
that's a fair point, BSC.
We really wanted to talk to England during World War II. That's why that cable exists. They converted a phone line that was huge into a data line.
This next one is from Ars Technica. In February of 2014, thousands of Asus router owners found a disturbing text file saved to their devices. This is an automated message being sent out to everyone affected, the message read. Your Asus router and your documents can be accessed by anyone in the world with an internet connection. The anonymous sender then urged readers to visit a site that explained more about the router vulnerability. On Tuesday, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission settled charges that alleged the hardware manufacturer failed to protect consumers as they were required by federal law. The settlement resolves a complaint that said the 2014 mass compromise was the result of vulnerabilities that allowed attackers to remotely log into routers and, depending on the user configuration, change security settings or access files stored on connected devices. Under the agreement, Asus will maintain a comprehensive security program subject to independent audits for the next 20 years. So Asus is going to have the security of their devices audited for 20 years by the Federal Trade Commission.
If the Federal Trade Commission knows what they're doing, it's time to start buying that router.
Nah, I doubt that they... What they'll do is they'll outsource it to somebody who knows what they do, I hope. You know, it's like, you know, the Federal Trade Commission is going to do the audit, and they've contracted, I don't know, Black Hills to do it. I think Black Hills knows how to do embedded device.
Either way, how many other routers can make the claim that this has passed whatever tests?
Right now, none.
I would toss that on a sticker.
That's where the article goes with it. The action should serve as a wake-up call, not just for other router makers, but for entire industries tied to the so-called Internet of Things wave that's adding internet connectivity to refrigerators and everything else. Over the past few years, researchers have uncovered a litany of security defects that make it possible for such devices to be remotely hijacked by attackers, blah, 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 blah. Now, here's the funny thing. Most of these routers are based off the same reference designs. Asus probably... I don't know that Asus makes their own boards, but their designs are based off the same processor and radio chips. So a lot of times they'll take the radio... they'll take the reference board from the chip manufacturers, tweak it a little, and then make their own version of it. Maybe, you know, more data lanes or, you know, whatever. But Cycros in the chat room is saying Asus makes their own main boards, but do they manufacture them or do they just design them and have like Foxconn make them? So, but anyways, a lot of it's beside the point. A lot of these companies make their own. They all work off the same reference designs. So if an Asus router has a vulnerability, a Broadcom Broadcom's a chip maker, but a Belkin or a Netgear or a Linksys router that's of the same general design is probably going to have the same vulnerabilities. Because most of them use the same embedded OSs, which are based on I used to know it. It's a little micro Unix kernel, but it's not Linux. It's this little mini OS and a little real time operating system. But a lot of them are based off the same OS, so it's a fair guess that if you have, you know, Asus's version of a router and Belkin's version of a router and Netgear's version of a router, they're all probably going to be vulnerable to the same attacks because they're all based off the same reference design. You know what I mean?
So if one cookie cutter fixes it, that may also fix all the rest of them at the same time?
So it just depends on who the FTC hires to do these audits, really. If they're hiring Bob's security company and Bob's just going to show up and give a thumbs up without actually looking at the damn things, which I'm sure is what Asus would want, because then they're guaranteed to pass. But if they have some real fixes going on with these things, because what they'll do is they'll push these changes back up the line to the reference boards and say, no, your boards have to pass these security tests because otherwise we can't sell them. That could be a good thing, ultimately. Or at least as far as getting these security holes closed. It sucks that you have to have government action to do it. Not a fan of that. But, I guess it is what it is.
Big chunk of the people that buy routers plug them up and walk away.
Yeah,
how many have you found that you could just go in with the generic password?
Where there was that one in Best Buy.
Geek Squad, change your password.
That was hilarious. Handed Static a PDA and said, here, have fun, and walk away.
But it was fun.
Your eyes
totally
bugged out when you saw what you thought I had done something a lot more impressive than what I'd really did, which was just look up the default password for that router.
True. You know, what gets me is there are so many different routers in out today. Why do people choose routers that are computer branded versus ones that have been around? And this is a rhetorical question. I'm not expecting an answer. I know the answer. People are dumb. But it's...
Well, they just go for the brands they know.
They go for the brands they know. They go for, oh, that's the lowest price. You know, that's a shiny box. You know, I mean, come on, people. Do
a
little bit
of
research. There you go, exactly. I mean, the router I have, it looks pretty cool. I got one of the Nighthawks. But it's a brand that's recognized, and I'm not going to have any issues with it.
You know, honestly, I have just one of the little Netgear NE3000s.
Yeah, I mean, I
use it because my parents have used one forever, and I used one for a while before I got this one, and they just work.
They're tried and true. Exactly. So
now I've honestly considered several times, and I have in the past actually just used an old computer as my router and then a switch. You know, the old machine I built that didn't have a case, which had the detonator button to start it. That was fun. The firewall I described as old man with a shotgun mode to madman.
Well, but, let me play video games.
Yeah, it took some fixing, didn't it? But no, I've actually considered building a PC router again just to make it easier to projects. So, and really, you know, a good Linux distribution would be every bit as good a router on a little like the Zotac makes a little micro Windows box that's like $100. That guy, wipe out Windows, put Linux on it, you can probably make a badass little router out of it. Although you might need a USB NIC. I don't know how well that would play speed-wise. Although for your internet connection, it's probably fine. USB NIC is usually 10-100. So you put it on the put the USB one on the cable modem side. But actually, Cycros, yes, that's why I like that little router, is it runs DDWRT quite well. So the let's see, what do I have next? You guys want to do the Windows 10 shows an ad?
Why are they adding? They're just forcing you to update anyway.
No, you misunderstand. Microsoft has begun showing advertisements on the Windows 10 lock screen. The company telegraphed this move nearly a year ago, but has actually avoided pushing the content until now. The ads in question are for The Rise of the Tomb Raider, which launched in January for the PC and last fall for the Xbox One and Xbox 360. It's at least considered to be a good game, so it's not as if Microsoft is pushing loud to see titles at people, but still the move will rile the So Windows 10 is going to start showing you ads on the lock screen unless you go turn it off. And you can turn it off.
No, it doesn't.
Mine didn't, but I've been running anti-beacon on all my Windows 10's builds. So
I have a standard Windows 10 installation. Doesn't show it to me.
You didn't get it? A lot of people did.
Nope.
A lot of people are reporting they saw the lock screen.
Maybe they've installed something that's actually turned that on for them.
What you have to turn on is an app. Apparently it's the Get Fun Facts, Tips, Tricks, and More on your lock screen. You have to turn that on. It may be on by default, but if you turned it off under personalization, then yeah.
I'm checking now.
It's off on all of mine, but I've got anti-beacon installed on all of mine as well, which turns it off by default and in policy.
Wait a minute, you said under personalization?
Yeah, that's where the screenshot here is showing.
Personalization. Oh, man. Let's try this again.
It's under the lock screen. Go to settings, personalization, then lock screen, and there's a box that reads, get fun facts, tips, and tricks on your lock screen. Now I'll go look at mine. Oh, this is a Windows 10 box. The broadcast box is still not a Windows 10. I've been expecting to log into the thing until it's doing the install, but it has yet to actually do it.
I'm still asking.
That is not there. That toggle switch is not even on mine.
That's not on mine either. Maybe it's a Windows Home thing.
Maybe. What version am I running?
Yeah, this is a Pro box.
Find that out? I forgot.
References?
No, just right-click your start menu, go to System, Windows 10 Pro.
System. I've been drinking. I can't find it. Yeah, I'm running Windows 10 Pro, so maybe that's what
it is.
Yeah,
it's like fourth down from the top. Windows 10 Pro, AMD FX 9370, 16 gigs of RAM. That's probably needs
some RAM. I'm up to install Windows Home now to see if this happens.
I've got Windows Home on my laptop, but I've got anti-beacon on it, so I doubt I would have gotten it. And the thing's not... Nine times out of ten, it's on Linux anyways, so... But,
interesting, though.
Kind of crappy. Because it means your machine's going out and looking for these things.
Ooh, and wait until they put the data caps on your internet? Then your screensaver's eating your data.
Not gonna happen in the U.S.
Comcast did. I remember before I moved, I kept getting nasty grams.
Okay, anybody that doesn't have Comcast not going to do it.
Your cell phone does it. Windows 10 is a phone.
No, my cell phone doesn't, actually.
Oh, you did not upgrade your phone to Windows 10?
My phone to Windows 10? I'm on Android.
No, Windows... Microsoft phones can get Windows 10.
Oh, okay.
Windows phone?
Oh, that would so suck, your cell phone bill going up because your phone's showing you Tomb Raider advertisements.
It wouldn't bother me, though. I have unlimited data.
I do, too, but that's most people don't anymore. So
I don't know. I thought it'd be getting more popular. A lot of the prepaid phones, they do unlimited data. I think they start throttling after so many gigs, though.
Yeah, so it's not really unlimited.
Sure it is. It's just not unlimited at the maximum speed. There's a difference. It's still unlimited. You can still get data.
So, oh, well, Comcast says theirs is unlimited, too. You just have to pay for it if you use more. it's like we're not going to turn it off. You just have to pay a higher bill. Yeah, limited would be if we capped it. You don't remember the Comcast CEO making all those weird arguments?
No, not really.
Oh, yeah, he made a big deal about that.
If we capped it. I love that.
Yeah, I've never had Comcast, so...
Yeah, they're a terrible company. They just hate their customers. I don't know how else to put it. So,
I don't think they actually have customers. Customers indicates that you choose to do business with them.
Yeah,
they have captives.
They have victims.
They have victims.
All right. Next one up is from Ars Technica. Disney CEO asks employees to chip in to pay copyright lobbyists.
Fuck no.
The Walt Disney Company has a reputation for lobbying hard on copyright issues. The 1998 copyright extension has been ever been dubbed the Mickey Mouse Protection Act by activists like Lawrence Lessig and have worked to reform copyright laws. This year, the company is turning to its employees to fund some of the battle. Disney CEO Bob Iger has sent a letter to the company's employees asking them to open their hearts and their wallets to the company's Political Action Committee, Disney PAC. The letter, which was... So it's voluntary. They're asking their employees to donate to their PAC. In the letter, which was provided to ours by a Disney employee, Iger tells workers about his company's recent intellectual property victories, including stronger IP protections in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a Supreme Court victory that destroyed Aereo, and continued vigilance in the state of copyright law in the digital entertainment. It also mentions that Disney is seeking an ongoing option to lower the corporate tax rate. With the support of the U.S. government, we achieved a win in the Supreme Court against Aereo, an internet service claiming the right to retransmit our broadcast signals without paying copyright or retransmission consent fees, writes Iger. In the coming year, we'll expect Congress and the admission. So, to give me a little bit more clear about what this story actually is, Disney is running a political action committee called Disney PAC, which is a copyright lobbying organization, I guess is the word.
I want to see which campaigns they're giving money to and kind of boycott them now.
But they're asking their employees to donate to their corporate PAC.
Okay, what's wrong with that?
Nothing, it's just...
Nothing. But, it's I just funny. Think it's funny. I think it's completely fine.
It is. There's actually nothing wrong with it. What would be wrong is if they were doing the whole union thing where we're going to take $5 out of every paycheck and put it in this PAC.
Yeah, that would be wrong. But if you choose to put your money where that pack is, cool. I've given the NRA money. Everyone's entitled to it.
If you work for Disney, it's probably in your best interest that Disney gets laws that are favorable to it, so I could see the argument. So, I just... The way Ars Technica skewed it is kind of funny, but it just reads hilarious. So... I had to cover it.
I just don't like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's the only reason. If they weren't backing you, I'd probably be even more fine with it.
Nobody who understands, you know, economics likes the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Okay, and I also dislike the Mickey Mouse Protection Act.
All right, let's move into this. Yo!
Hadouken! Love you long time.
I've got that version of it floating around somewhere. So, first thing I have up is a GitHub project called the Silk Guardian. Silk Guardian is an anti-forensic kill switch that waits for a change on your USB ports and then wipes your RAM, deletes your precious files, and turns off your computer. So it's a Linux kernel module that is watching what's plugged into the USB ports. And if it detects a change, so by change, that's in you unplug something or somebody plugs something in, it'll trigger and can, you know, shut down the machine and start deleting crap. Not in that order.
That would be even cooler.
I can delete shit off a powered down PC.
Well, you can. It's called an electromagnet or a hammer.
So,
like, what's this? This is a hard reset device. It's a hammer.
So, what about a device that's like plugged in? Okay, I have a hub, and then I have one of those little portable document scanners. It has a power switch on it, right?
Oh.
And it auto shuts itself off. Is that a different state? It's not being unplugged, but it's killing power to it.
You would have to boot a Linux on it and watch D message and see if it sends a D message when it spins down.
The only reason I say it is because I actually keep bumping the power button, and after a few seconds, or well, a few minutes of inactivity, it automatically shuts itself off.
Well, where I see this being useful is if you're hyper paranoid, you could set up a laptop with like a, like a flash drive on a wrist lanyard, so it'd be kind of like a dead man switch for your laptop. That if you get grabbed and the, you know, you yank the flash drive out, the machine just formats itself and then just spins down, or at least you know, spins down, so they, you know, if you've got like disk encryption. But more likely is if you have a server that's on all the time and its state's not changing very much. Because if you have a server and somebody wants to start getting into it, well, they're going to plug a keyboard and mouse into it to try to figure out what it's doing. Or if they're going to confiscate it, they're going to unplug your keyboard and mouse so they can take it. And they usually try to take it in a running state. So they have some interesting, well, they're UPS battery packs, but they have some interesting ways of wiring those. So they, my favorite was the one where they plug it into the wall outlet and then disconnect the wall outlet from the power line in the house, and it's continuing to feed power because it was like a reverse power switch or something like that. That one was cool. But the police have several of these devices that are designed to be plugged into like power strips or even the wall outlet so they can keep the machine on and running when they confiscate it. So, you know, they're going to unhook the keyboard and mouse when they take it, or they're going to hook a keyboard and mouse up to it to see what it's doing. So if you have a little server somewhere, this could actually be really useful for rigging it up such that if somebody screws with it, it deletes anything incriminating. Of course, if you're keeping something incriminating on your server, although the way WinLaw is all this day and age,
everyone is guilty. It's just whether or not you're guilty of what they're looking for at the time.
Yeah. So if this is actually more of an exercise than just, you know, having a little bit of fun with your privacy, really. I mean, is somebody actually going to come for the little Raspberry you've set up as a server? Probably not. But, you know. You know, if you're worried about these things, and you would know if you should be, or you're just paranoid, you can set up the server such that if somebody yanks the thing from it or plugs something into it, it deletes itself. If you're going to do that, make sure you have a way of getting the stuff you care about back, because 9 times out of 10, it's going to be somebody who, you know, doesn't know what's going on, screwing with it, or accidentally docking a cord out of it. So, I'd suggest some data recovery procedures be handy, or you know, maybe just not have it delete anything, just have it spin itself down. Because my next article I have for a Digital Dojo is linuxandubuntu.com, which is a hell of a domain, It's just like, you know, SEO built into the right into the name. They actually have a really nice write-up on installing Veracrypt on Linux. I think it's Ubuntu specific, but Veracrypt is a fork of TrueCrypt, where they've been trying to continue it since the original TrueCrypt shut down. And this talks about setting it up with encrypted drives and getting it working on Ubuntu, showing it how to set up encrypted volumes and even partitions. Now, Linux cannot... You're not going to be able to boot off a Veracrypt encrypted partition, but you could set up storage containers. I don't think TrueCrypt could ever boot a Linux partition.
But, it just popped up for me to like their page as I loaded it? Your link. Piece of junk. I got AdBlock too. My AdBlock's working on everything else except for this one for some reason.
Mine didn't do that.
So, TrueCrypt, that is the... wouldn't let you audit their code, right?
Yeah, they did get their code audited, but then they got shut. They shut down shortly after that. Don't ask. Veracrypt absolutely has a Windows port because they're a fork of TrueCrypt, and TrueCrypt ran on everything. So, but yeah, it's just a nice guide on getting it set up, because especially because on Linux, it's a little bit weird to get it going. So that sucks that the. And came up with a Facebook like, because it didn't do that for me.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So.
At least it's not an auto-playing video.
Oh, yeah. God, I hate those.
Firefox.
Yeah, that's what I'm on. Firefox with AdBlock, yeah.
Yep.
A few other things, but nothing that would get in the way there. So, all right. That's all I've got.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about you said you were going to talk about your attempt to migrate to Linux
earlier. Did I say I was going to talk about that?
Yeah.
You said then you were going to touch on it again later.
Yep.
No.
We just touched on it. See, now you're not a liar. Bam! Yeah. We had your back.
Smack.
So, I've tried several times to go 100% Linux, but I've ran into two major problems with going 100% Linux. One is software support, and that includes games. The other, I got a bunch of hardware that just doesn't have Linux support, like, at all. Or the support it has is just terrible. So, of course, the true Linux advocate's answer to that would be write a device driver. Make it work. Write the software you need. I don't have that kind of time. I really don't. So, my laptop 90% of the time is booted into Linux. I live, it's at least 50-50, if not better, mostly on Linux. But I still like playing the occasional game, and I've got a lot of audio stuff that there just simply does not work on Linux. So, yeah. Yeah, I would love to be 100% Linux, especially with Windows starting to put ads on your lock screen. I mean, crap. But it's just... I mean, you can get really close with virtual machines and Wine. But, I'm still dual booting most of my machines. So, it's not a problem with Linux. It's a problem with things around it. You know, it's not Linux's fault that this random sound card I have doesn't work. It's Focusrite's fault. They're the ones who make the sound card, right? Or, you know, some of my random ass MIDI controllers, or some of my even weirder hardware. Like, I've got some drawing tablets and shit like that. That just, you know,
but why is it Focusrite's fault?
Because they did not release a driver.
Okay, again, why is it their fault?
Because they're not supporting it.
Okay. I'm trying
ask
to ask
in a way, ask in a different way. I'm not understanding.
Yes, I'm trying to coax you into the correct answer. It's not their fault, it's your fault. You're the one that bought the software. They're the ones that built that piece of hardware to work with Windows. Who says that they have to build something to work with Linux?
If there was enough market share, they would.
Maybe.
You're right, but I'm not going to stop using a fantastic sound card just to not use a particular piece of software.
Sure. No, I'm not saying you should. But you talk about market share. I mean, go back to the App Store. You have to have a Macintosh or Hackintosh in order to compile it. Market share for that is huge. You know? So, yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm throwing it out there. I'm playing devil's advocate because I'm, you know, kind of...
Well, you're right. The problem is I bought hardware with a different use in mind without checking that it was Linux compatible. And that's partly on me for not having the foresight to check that. And it would be really nice if a lot of hardware manufacturers would at least make the token effort, but they don't. So
there you go. That's the correct statement we should be making. Same with the software, the gaming side. I'm totally with you. I would be on Linux 100% if the gaming was there. It's not. You know, sure, you can put it in Wine and in a virtual server.
You get a
server.
Lot of them in Wine, but
you
Wine
know,
don't
you,
work quite right.
Exactly, you get frame drops. That's you know, artifacting happening, and it's like,
you know what my real problem is on my main rig. My primary screen is an ultra wide with a weird resolution.
So your graphics isn't correct.
Well, no, the graphics are correct. I mean, the desktops will render correctly. And native 3D games, a lot of times, will at least pick up a functional resolution. But Wine gets confused, and I'll get some very badly stretched games, and it can be a fight to get some of them to see the correct resolution, to the point that you have to turn on the Wine virtual desktop and tell that what resolution to use. I mean, I've worked around and around and around with it. Don't misunderstand. I've gotten it to work for a lot of games, but... That's an absolute nightmare with some games to get it to see the correct resolution, to the point that you end up, you know, gaming on one of the screens that's off on the side, which is, in my case, is a problem because they're vertical. So
you're saying that that's an ultra fat boomer heading at you in Left 4 Dead 2, right?
Yes. Some of them have been stretched really funny. So... like I said, and that's, you know, and the monitor works in Linux, right? It's just, it's got a weird resolution, so some things in Linux get really confused.
Yeah.
So. But that's... It's one of those things where if you structure what you have correctly, you can do it fantastically. My laptop is a fantastic example. It runs Linux great. Except for it's one of those Asus ones with two screens. I've never gotten the outer screen to work in Linux, and I have some shell scripts that when the thing boots up, that just turn all the extra outer screen stuff off, because otherwise it just messes up all the input, because it's got a tablet on it, and it'll lose its mind, and I won't be able to get the mouse out of the lower left corner. Don't ask why it's the lower left. That's just where it ends up. So, but it's just, yeah, it's interesting because I've got hardware that I basically have to sacrifice if I want to be on Linux 100% of the time. And as much as I enjoy free software, I'm a little too practical to, you know, take something that I've paid a couple $100 for and be like, okay, I'm not going to use this now because my preferred operating system doesn't support it.
Yeah. If there was a wider adoption of Linux into the mainstream, you're right, probably, you know, more companies would put out drivers for their hardware, more software would be written with Linux in mind, you know, it would be better.
Well, the software problem is an interesting one, because I think ultimately, especially for office software, it's going to start to go away as you see everything written for web browser stuff, you know, Google Docs, and you know, people wanting this shit to work on Chromebooks, right?
Office 365. Well,
Chromebooks are Linux. Chromebook is Gentoo. The oddball fork of Gentoo, if I remember correctly. But, like, Photoshop has a version that runs on that, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, all you gotta do is tell Photoshop you're on Chrome, and, you know, you've got Photoshop on Linux. So, I mean, a lot of the software argument's gonna go away as everything starts to support, you know, web software as opposed to hardware clients, or endpoint clients, I should say. But
it's just not moving fast enough.
Well, there's that. And, you know, your game engines, none of them are like that. So, yeah. But there are also you should start to see more games crop up on Linux, because there's a new 3D standard coming out. AMD was putting the work into it, but there's a couple of them that are based around expanding OpenGL, and they gave it a new name. So, and a lot of the latest video cards already support it. It's just a question of getting drivers out there. So you're going to start to see more cross-platform development, because the same libraries work across all three. So at that point, you won't have this. The main thing keeping most games off Linux is DirectX. The game is written for DirectX, and you might see an OpenGL port to get it on Mac, but you know, because the Mac market's so small, a lot of times they'll just skip it. So, you know, then yep. Wine kind of supports DirectX, but it's not really there. The other thing I'm waiting on is Gallium 3D, which is a KVM driver that actually can emulate a graphics card. So I'm kind of hoping that works out well, because it'll allow virtual machines to use your 3D hardware without having to put a second graphics card in a machine.
Yep. But
that's pretty much it. I kept running into hardware problems, so I end up dual booting most of the time.
And then at that point,
just can't seem to get to work.
Well, what's the point, you know, really?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. I have a lot of tools on my laptop that I use for work that are, I could probably get them to work in Windows, but they just work better in Linux, especially network stuff, programming stuff, things like that. But so I'm especially at work, my laptop is on Linux 90% of the time. But then when I come home and want to play a game, yeah, Windows. So anyways, so that's all I got.
Cool.
Anybody have anything before we close it out?
I think that covers everything.
I don't know. Has anybody else ever made an attempt to go Linux full time? I've tried like 4 times.
I did recently. Well, I say recently, probably, you know, within the last 6 months, but that failed.
You hit the same problems I did?
Mine was more of the game side aspect of it. I don't have a lot of other really software that's, you know, specific to just Windows. You know, the Office products, yeah, I can use anything. I primarily use the Google docs and whatnot, or, you know. So, yeah, gaming
awesome.
Was a big
Cycros.
One.
Cycros in the chat room saying he's Slackware full time. You hit any hardware pro? Well, to chat with somebody on a podcast over. So we're gonna close out the show. I might hit Cycros up in the chat room here in a minute, but other than that, that's all I got. And time to kill Pac-Man here.